too. Glad you're along tonight. Glad I'm along tonight. George Feiler joins us this hour. He was supposed to be on last night, I think. It's kind of a blur. I think it was last night. And he was kind enough to reschedule for this evening. We have a special guest coming on with George as well. Hello, Major. How are you?
I'm fine.
Good.
Beautiful day in New Jersey today.
Medford, New Jersey.
It's up about 80 degrees. So spring is finally sprung.
So no more snow, no more cold, no more wind, no more rain. It's normal in Medford.
Not for a while.
You sound a bit away from the microphone there somehow.
I'm near it.
There you go. You have to hold it, George, you see.
I'm holding it.
All right. So did you catch the, obviously you did catch that we talked earlier about the San Diego sighting? We didn't talk about it. What did you think of the San Diego sighting? That was a very spectacular cluster of different colored orbs in a very unusual kind of a spiral event. They've got video of it. I had it posted. You can find it in the UFO section at Rents. And that was a pretty amazing thing to see in the night sky. I don't know that I've ever seen anything like that ever. Never. What'd you think of that?
Yeah, I thought that was spectacular. I feel that our friends are putting on bigger and better shows.
They're not hiding, that's for sure. There's no way to explain something like that by way of any natural term that I can come up with. It wasn't a military aircraft. It was just hovering there in the night sky. And I don't know how many items there were in the formation, maybe 20, maybe more. But it was really something. Do look it up if you haven't seen it. Just do a search for San Diego UFO, and you'll probably find it at the top of the list.
I have it. It'll be out tomorrow in my files.
Good. Yeah, George's Filer's Files come out every week, and I would urge all of you to get a subscription. You can get it. It costs nothing. And if you want to see what they look like, just go to Rents right now. Look in the top center section, and you will find his most current 17, 16, 17, and 18 editions. Those are weeks. Every week it comes out. Beautifully produced, highly informative, always fun, even if you don't buy into the whole situation. I think you'll have to understand that there is something going on. Very unusual, whatever it may be. And, yeah, good. We'll look for that tomorrow and pop it right up. And if you'd like a subscription, you can write to George at M-A-J-O-R, Major Star, at Verizon.net. And just say you heard him here and you'd like a subscription, he'll send it to you. And you can have a good time with it. It's absolutely fascinating and historically relevant, all kinds of things. Okay, George, go ahead.
I was going to say that lots going on in the field, and the average person doesn't know much about this field. Obviously, we have some experts even online here with us, but people just don't realize how much information is available from highly experienced and
qualified. Yeah, that's a very good point.
In fact, our guest, Lieutenant Colonel Ware, has a master's degree in nuclear engineering and a BS in mechanical engineering. The point is that he's well qualified, and that many of the people who are the researchers in this field have high degrees and have other experiences as well.
And you want to bring? Go ahead. Oh, it's extremely important. Tell me his degrees again. A master's in
nuclear engineering.
That's all, huh? Okay.
BS in mechanical engineering from Duke University.
Well, that's a top-flight school. He's obviously extremely well-qualified to speak forth on all kinds of issues, and this one, not the least of which. That's very good. You want to introduce him and bring him on? We'll start.
Sure. Any case, Donald Ware is a retired lieutenant colonel in the Air Force, used to fly fighters and other aircraft.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the Eastern Regional Director of MUFON, just before me, so to speak. I followed him and his expertise.
Mm-hmm.
And he's also director of International UFO Congress. So he has an excellent background and a lot to say.
Someone with his background, George, coming to this field enhances its integrity from A to Z. It's just extraordinary to have someone like that. And there's so many really good people in this field, and they're not just wasting their time. They're studying something that is extremely important and absolutely fascinating and has a history to it that is enormous.
I agree.
What do we call him?
Donald?
Okay. Are you there, Donald?
They named me Donald, but ever since I've had a computer, I shortened it to Don. That's
I was going to suggest
letters
that.
To type.
Don, thank you very much for being here. You've been at this a long time, and with educational qualifications that you have, it lends great credence to everything that you bring forward and the whole field tries to bring forward. We don't have answers to all of it. We have guesstimates. We have observations. We have facts. We have things that can be admitted to court. We don't have the ultimate answer yet. Let me ask you a question, because you have been in the military like George for such a long time. How much longer do you feel the government is going to play this cover-up game? When are they going to give us our birthright and say, okay, well, here's the truth, whatever it may be, whatever it may be? Because they know, and you know better than most, and George does, he's chased them. You may have too, that there's something going on here.
Well, a specific answer to that question, if you want a time, is possibly before the end of this month's over.
You think? Why so?
Yeah. Well, last year I published a book called The Man with the Golden Sword.
Mm-hmm.
That's something you can find at timestreampictures.com.
Okay.
And it describes 2 years in the life of an OSS agent who became the most highly decorated soldier of any war. Had some absolutely amazing experiences, and I published that first just so people could know who the author is. His name is John B. Leith, born in 1920 with a photographic memory. And he learned things during the war. He was, for example, the go-between between General Patton and General von Rundstedt. And you may know that during the last year or so of the war, there were lots of Germans, a lot of high-level Germans that were fleeing Germany.
I know that very well, sir.
And there was when you went to his head, it was up near the mouth, the headwaters of the Rhine.
Mm-hmm.
These people would come through there, and those that were authorized to go to the same place that Admiral Byrd went in 1946, that is New Berlin in Neuschwabenland, or New Germany,
mm-hmm.
in the Antarctic. They would get transportation on round-wing planes, which are anti-gravity vehicles.
Really?
Really. About 10,000 of them got out that way. Another 50,000 at least went on. This is in a fairly short period while the war was still going on.
Yes.
20,000 of Germany's finest blue-eyed blonde young soldiers and 20,000 of their blue-eyed blonde women went with them in large submarines that could carry 500 people at a time.
I understand that an awful lot of them ended up in Argentina as well. We've documented that on this program.
A lot of them did go to Argentina.
Yeah.
In fact, Hitler's son was taken there by Eva Braun. She bore him in 1940 with one of Hitler's doubles, so I've been told. And This guy eventually got into New Berlin from Argentina.
Uh-huh. So these round wing discs were large enough to carry people and certainly powered enough.
They came in several sizes, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That book's not ready yet.
That's a blockbuster.
It is a blockbuster. And it's way overdue because he was chosen. He could not, because of his World War II experience as an OSS agent, he could not acknowledge that he had any wartime service until after he was dead. Mm. He died in 1998.
Mm-hmm.
And so
say his name, would you, Don, again, please, slowly?
His name is John B. Leith, L-E-I-T-H.
Okay.
And you know from experience that if the shadow world government wants to release something into the public domain, one of their rules is they can't give them anything while a primary witness is still alive.
Right.
So they release things through people who are in the process of dying. For example, Colonel Steve Wilson, who headed the 1010 Special Security Squadron, operating out of S4, near Area 51,
mm-hmm.
was dying in April of 2001. Yeah, April 2001, he was given an organizational chart of the Shadow World Government.
Wow.
And the policies are different between the U.S. government and the Shadow World Government, because the U.S. government's policy was codified in 1953 by the Robertson Panel, and it says basically it's in the national interest to keep the general public from getting too excited about the alien presence. But the world government's policy is to put information into the public domain so it's available for those who are seeking it without forcing it on those who aren't ready. Because believe me, most people on the surface of this planet are not ready for ETs.
That makes sense in terms of information dissemination. Most people on the planet, Don, honestly, after the films of the 1950s, the sci-fi films,
right,
and how many decades since then? Seven. I think we'd probably yawn at this point. Many of them would. Oh, all right, well, they're here, so what? I don't think it would shake the government of the world up or the individual countries who have a lot on the block as much as it would have.
I think there's a spiritual reason for that, because what I've learned, I've had significant assistance in my education from what I call angels, aliens, and world government folks since 1989.
Hmm.
You're probably aware I saw seven red light type UFOs over Washington, D.C. in 1952.
You were there.
26th July, the second Saturday morning. It was, I was about a block from home, 11:30 at night, walking toward home. And I looked up and I saw these things and I studied them. And they obviously weren't celestial objects. They were hanging around in somewhat random motion. They weren't behaving like airplanes.
Mm-hmm.
And my thought was, is this what I read about in the headlines of the Washington Star the previous Sunday morning,
mm-hmm.
which is 2 inches high, flying saucers over Washington? I found out that those headlines showed up around the world.
I've seen that headline. I know
London, Los Angeles, Hungary, stuff like that. And I have read everything I could find about UFOs ever since. You know, I spent 4 years at Duke. And they have a million volumes in their libraries. The best thing I found in there on the UFO subject was publications of the American Rocket Society.
Huh.
And it was headed by the same guy that instigated the Robertson Panel. The publisher of the American Rocket Society, or the editor of American Rocket Society magazine, was
That's kind of funny.
CIA guy.
Yeah.
And then I spent, 26 years traveling all over the world in the Air Force and read everything I could find in their libraries. And believe me, the Air Force carries a lot of really good books on UFOs in their libraries. They just don't want to have to talk about them personally.
Mm-hmm.
But they want the public to get educated on it.
Were you ever, obviously, you're search for knowledge, your quest was known by your superiors and so forth, and those people who would care about this. Were you ever approached and taken in, so to speak, to any level of the cover?
Not until a couple of years ago. Hmm. While I was in the service, I did not receive any information from any official source concerning the alien presence. Consequently, I felt perfectly free to talk about anything that, you know, I had nothing that I had to guard.
Maybe they did that on purpose so you could speak.
So when I was able to retire from the Air Force at age 47 with 100% of my time to do whatever I wanted to do and enough money to do it, then, you know, I did tell people about six of my military friends who had seen UFOs up close, and nobody seemed to bother me about that.
Up close meaning aerial, on the ground, landed, crashed?
Well, one story, for example, when I graduated from Duke, I took a job with North American Aviation in their thermodynamics department, ended up working on the flight test program of the F-100 heat and vent system, but I had just purchased from my older brother, who had just spent a tour in the Air Force getting out. He had a degree from Duke in political science, and he got out to go to Columbia, and he gave me his old 98 Holiday coupe, and I put an advertisement in the paper and won. I'm going to California. Anybody want to go with me? Pay for half a gas? And a young Navy guy did. And so we spent 4 days driving across the country, and it's gotten off of a picket submarine in the Atlantic there between Iceland and Scotland, I guess. And he said he was on deck, that had the night watch, and he was up on deck, and he had his camera with him, and all set up to take pictures of the phosphorescence caused by the props, you know, this bacteria in the water.
Sure.
And he sees this greenish light beside the sub, and he says, that's unusual.
In the water.
In the water. And so he called the first mate up. He couldn't figure out what was causing that. And the first mate gets up there, and he sees it, and he sees that it's rising toward the surface. So he called the captain to the bridge, and the captain got there about the time this 30-foot diameter thing, a greenish glow all around it, looked metallic, came out of the water. He took a picture of it, just breaking the water, three or four more of them. Pictures on the way up. They picked it up on the radar and just tracked it straight up into space. And so the Navy captain took his camera. He said he did his camera back. They bought him a new one about a month later.
Mm-hmm.
But they had these silhouettes of UFOs pictures, you know, on the doors of inside the submarine. They were a picket submarine. He told me that about 6 months before that, they tracked one from the Iceland area down into the Caribbean, just past Cuba, before they lost sight of it, or lost contact with it. It was going 3,700 miles an hour at 70,000 feet. So as a thermodynamics engineer, that tells me that the boundary layer is not touching that vehicle. And if you read some of Wendell Stevens' reports, like UFO contact from undersea, you know, Filiberto Cardenas in 1979, who was pulled up the blue beam into this flying saucer in the presence of three other people in broad daylight, he said he was taken to an island where there kind of a door and a rock wall opened up, and there's this smaller flying saucer, and he gets in it. It's just him in the front of a seat, about a window about the size of a Volkswagen window, and there's a little gray guy, almond eyes, sitting in a jump seat right off his right shoulder. And he says they go fast over the water. They go down through the water. And he thinking that the water is not touching the windshield. It's something's holding away. And they end up in a garage on the bottom where he says there are 25 alien vehicles in down there. And he can't figure out how they're keeping the water out of that garage. That was the most puzzling thing to him. Anyway, they take him inside and introduce him to the head alien down, who tells him that I think there are 700 ETs working out of that base. and they had a number of other bases, both on land and underwater.
Fascinating. What's their purpose? What are they working on? Do we know?
Well, the general purpose, you know, when I retired from the Air Force after having done all that reading, my first volunteer job since I was 47, I'd just been doing volunteer work, was with MUFON. I worked for them for 10 years. First day of official retirement, which is 1st January of 83, I became a field investigator for MUFON and a state section director for the five western counties of Florida.
Mm-hmm.
You know, MUFON only had one person in those five counties, and he was a Navy officer who had just been sent somewhere else. So I was the only one there. I was starting from scratch. And, you know, by the time 1987, 4 years later, rolled around, I had trained 14 field investigators. The last class was only halfway through when Ed Walters started taking really good pictures of flying saucers.
Oh, at Gulf Breeze.
Yeah, I was primary investigator along with it'll come to me in a minute.
Those were spectacular pictures, George Filer, the Gulf Breeze photos, which there was a large effort made to debunk them all, of course. But
yeah, there were three books, which is, what was it, Gulf Breeze Sightings, that Ed wrote with his wife.
Mm-hmm.
And the second was called UFO Abductions in Gulf Breeze, I think, that he wrote with his wife, co-wrote. And the third one he wrote with Dr. Bruce Maccabee, it calls UFOs Real, Here's the Truth. Or I think, Here's the Proof. UFOs Are Real, Here's the Proof.
Well, the photographs were stunning, I know that.
Yeah, he took 42 photographs, but he only showed us investigators 41 of them. When I went over to his house to get him to autograph the third book, he brought out the 42nd picture, and I said, Ed, why didn't you show me this picture earlier? He says, because I didn't remember taking it.
Huh.
And he thought that was a little too spooky.
That is spooky.
Yeah, but they posed for him. He had 22 encounters, including 18 photographic sessions in those 5.5 months.
Any idea why they picked Ed Walters?
Well, he had been working with them earlier, particularly down in Costa Rica. So they knew him, and they had been using him on at least four of his onboard experiences to provide emotional training for the Zeta-human hybrids. You know, these guys, if you're familiar with these Zeta Reticulans, who happen to be the best genetic engineers in a very large part of our local universe. And they are helping humans develop a species, a whole new species called Homo alterospatialis.
I've heard this before for years. You know, they better hurry. They're going to run out of time.
The number of the people who have graduated from the third grade classroom on this planet, which is the free will choice classroom,
right,
to the fourth grade classroom, where your reason for being in your physical body is to learn to express unconditional love of others. So it's a joint human alien angelic. Human-alien-angelic program to transform planet Earth from a third-grade classroom for the soul to a fourth-grade classroom. And I'm told that the number of people on this planet in the fourth grade right now is about 2 billion. And that's doubled in the last 10 years. 10 years ago, that number was only about 1 billion.
Are they born that way, Don, or are they somehow...
No, a lot of them are on the surface who have made enough free will choices toward service to others to where over half of their choices over all of their lifetimes are considered by their seraphim to be unselfish choices. Those who watch over you every second of the day and the night, they're the ones that decide. They keep tally on all of your daily choices, whether they're service to others or service to self.
Huh.
Selfish or unselfish.
Well, we have a very selfish orientation through the media, through lifestyle.
We do, but that is changing very rapidly.
Oh, I'm for that.
Because, that number has doubled in the 10 years, last 10 years. If it doubles in the next 10 years, you could be really close.
Well, past the tipping point. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, past the 50% point.
Mm-hmm.
I have an intuitive feeling that all we got to do is get those earthlings, which include those on the surface of the planet, those in the inside of our planet, under the crust, and those that are on our off-planet bases. We put our first manned base on Mars in 1963, and we had manned bases on the moon before that.
I've heard that
and
before,
I think
too.
Yeah, and I think we got them on Europa. George S. Robinson, in 1993, when Clinton was elected, my friend Scott Jones, who is a retired Navy officer of 30 years with the Navy, went to work as a special assistant for Senator Claiborne Pell, member of the Council on Foreign Relations.
Sure do, yeah.
A very unselfish guy. He's the guy responsible for Pell Grants, so poor people can get a decent education.
Yeah, he was a good one.
Yeah. And Scott's job for Pell was to go around the country to all the psychic research conferences and report to him what's going on in that field.
Hmm.
And when Pell introduced Scott Jones to Lawrence Rockefeller, Lauren apparently picked up some really good vibes from him and mm-hmm. said, Scott, while you're traveling all around the world at these other conferences, I'd like you to visit the UFO conferences and report to me what's going on in that field. And so he was doing that. And then he also told Scott later, as a naval officer, you get really good at writing trip reports. I wrote a number of trip reports as an Air Force officer. For the Tactical Air Command, I was monitoring the high-energy and high-power laser development in this country. So Lawrence told Scott Jones, says, when you're ready to work for me full-time, let me know. That happened in 1993. And so Lawrence gave Scott $1 million and said, set up a 501(c) to perform a service for humanity. So he became president of that, and Senator Pell was the co-founder. And he went back to Lawrence Rockefeller, and he says, well, I've got it set up. What do you want me to do with it? He says, I want you to talk the Clinton administration into releasing to the public previously classified information about the alien presence.
Well, does this bring us to Bill Clinton's famous effort by sending Webb Hubble over to the Pentagon or somewhere to find out the truth, and Webb came back allegedly and told Bill, sorry, they won't tell me?
Well, I think he had indicated he wanted to know about the subject before this other thing happened.
Uh-huh.
I don't know the exact date when what date Webb went to do that, but it was fairly early in his tour that I think he was expressing an interest in it before he actually became president.
Hmm. I think you may be right. I think I read about that. Let me bring George Filer in here just for a minute.
Okay.
George, any comments on what Don has laid on the table here? Very, very interesting.
Well, I also was involved with the Florida sightings and went down there and visited the people. I think it was the first time I met Don.
Yeah, that was pretty early on. That was in the late 80s when you got down there. Right. I remember you and your lovely
very
wife.
Very significant. And I figured that other people must know about it. And it happened that my daughter lived down in Pensacola Beach, and so I would walk around talking to people. And it was amazing how many had seen the UFOs over Gulf Breeze and, over the coast. And Oh, people would see him come out of the water and fly up to the buildings, you know, maybe the third floor of a building, and, you know, just be a few feet away from them and then go back out into the ocean and into the water. There's all kinds of information besides what you might call the Gulf Breeze sighting. And I wrote the proof of one of the books that they put out.
If I may,
when you start investigating, it's amazing what you're going to find.
A lot of people don't do investigations. You're right. They don't do the legwork. They don't talk to the people. They do research by remote control, and that isn't how you do it. You got to get out there and find it. What I'd like to do is go back. If you remember the hacker, Gary McKinnon, George does certainly, and Don, I'm sure you do too,
hacked
into the Pentagon on just a landline phone, and so there were all kinds of people in there hacking. But he found files, Navy files, with crews, ship names, assignments, transfers of command, all of which were identified as craft, but they didn't exist in the normal nomenclature of Navy information. And he came to the conclusion that these were obviously off-planet craft and that we have a tremendous fleet of operable machines up there that have been around for a long time. Can you tell us anything more about that aspect of this whole thing? Because it is fascinating to think that we have been to Mars. When you look at all the pictures of Mars, Don, as you have, and seen things from the Curiosity and the earlier probes that look obviously intelligently designed somehow, you got to start scratching your head.
Finish a couple of thoughts here and get into that subject. Concerning the Rockefeller White House initiative, I probably know more about the results of that than Scott Jones does because I studied that whole thing and it was all released covertly. So, it was Aviv's efforts. We got to see the alien autopsy film and the alien interview film, they call it. These are real films, but all the information about them is disinformation. They have to put, the shadow world government folks feel they have to put some disinformation into most every release, every covert release. So that's the lever they use to control how much the government or the population gets excited about it.
I understand.
They're leaking information without causing the general public to get too excited.
So they throw some BS caveats in there to mix it up.
Right. You got to expect that. You know, even in the Serpo stuff, you know, Victor Martinez asked us all who were on his list early, what percentage of this stuff that they're putting out on the Serpo website is disinformation? And my assessment was 5%. And I think of all the people that answered that request from Victor Martinez, mine was the lowest. Everybody else thought it was more than 5%. Quickly back to Gulf Breeze.
Yeah, we have a break coming up here, so go ahead. I might have to pause you just for a couple minutes, but go ahead. Back to Gulf.
Yeah.
Now here comes the music. So let's do our break.
Okay, we'll do that later.
Talking to Lieutenant Colonel Don Ware and Major George Filer. George with us tonight with a special guest, and very interesting. The qualifications of both of these gentlemen are remarkable. And we will be right back with more conversation. We'll talk about Gulf Breeze, and maybe we can talk a little bit more about the much rumored off-planet technology we have to move humans and others around from planet to planet, which we've been doing for 50 years plus. So hold on, and we'll be right back. wherever you are around the world listening. Glad to have you on board tonight, talking with George Filer and Lieutenant Colonel Donald Ware, a special guest tonight. Okay, Don, tell us a little bit more, if you want, about Gulf, and if we can head into Gary McKinnon's discovery and his Pentagon phone hack, which was very strange and had to embarrass a lot of people.
One story I haven't told much at Gulf Breeze is that when co-investigator with me and I decided that we needed to get these photographs, Ed's original photographs, recorded for the WAR-3 TV database. It was Sunday evening, and I called from Fort Walton Beach over to Gulf Breeze, about 44 miles away, and I said, "We've got an appointment for you at WAR-3 studio to record on their cameras all of your originals." And take them over there at 9 o'clock. Well, at 8 o'clock the next morning, a white American-made sedan showed up in front of his house, and they came up, knocked on his door, and he opened it, and they flashed this big their badge at him, and he read it carefully, and it said Air Force Special Security Services. Hmm. And they presented him with a material seizure warrant. They told him that it was illegal for him to keep those pictures and they must turn them over to him. And he's pretty quick on his feet. And he said, "Well, Dave Barry from the Miami Herald was just here this weekend."
Oh,
and
yeah.
he gave his originals to Dave. He's a very humorous writer.
Yeah, yes, he is.
Well, big audience. And and he told the guys that he'd given Dave those the day before.
Good job.
And they barged into his house and looked around, and they were standing within 6 inches of the drawer that he had all of his originals underneath, under one of his building plans. And they said, if you're lying to us, you're in big trouble. Well, he did. They left then, and he did get those pictures to the WAR-3 TV. Of course, local television stations, the guys at ABC headquarters will not allow a story like Gulf Breeze to go, spread nationally.
They're running loose. No way.
Yeah, there are people there who are there to block local stories from getting out of the local area.
Yep.
And that I thought was kind of neat. And so I had already retired, so I didn't have access to the classified phone book at Eglin, but I knew someone did. And I asked him, I said, "Can you find anything for me on something called Air Force Special Security Services?" And he found it. It's in the intelligence office there at Eglin Air Force Base. So those are the guys that apparently had the bug on my phone. So they were listening to everything that I was telling Ed and Ed was telling me on the Gulf Breeze sightings.
Mm-hmm.
So, concerning McKinnon, he got some very sensitive information when he hacked into that. And not only did our government not want that information to take headlines around the world, but they didn't want to encourage other hackers from trying to break into secret government files. And I think that's why they drug on that...
they put him through hell.
There are rumors going around that they could put him in jail for 70 years or something, and all this. They're trying to put the fear thing on other hackers, using him to do that.
I understand.
And that's related to, I think, Colonel Steve Wilson in 2001 when he released the last UFO researcher, I think, was Richard Borland, that interviewed Steve Wilson before he died. But he did release...
When did Steve die?
Maybe in 2001.
I believe I had him on the program in the 90s.
You,
it seems
you,
to me I did.
Very, very Probably yeah. did. I think you did.
Certainly remember his work. Yeah.
Right. So that organizational chart has been floating around for ever since 2001.
Mm-hmm.
And the people that authorized Steve was head of 10th Special Security Squadron. He was the guy that controlled the crash retrieval teams and the men in black.
I'll be darned.
That's the 10-10 Special Security Squadron.
Huh.
The ones at Eglin that had the bug on, you know, that came over to Ed's house, you know, reported to him.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Ooh, Don, if I might just for a second step aside, who are the men in black? Why do they dress like that? What's the deal?
Well, they're the cover-up guys. They're the guys that are supposed to erase.
The fixers.
The fixers, the guy. You know, they show you very well in the movie Men in Black.
Mm-hmm.
The only difference between reality and the Men in Black, as I understand it, is that, yes, our government can selectively cause someone to not remember things. They can selectively block your memories. They just don't use this little pen flash thing to do it. They have other techniques. It's usually all of them I know who've been through that process. It's been a drug-assisted hypnotic process.
Hmm.
They mm-hmm. give you a shot in the arm. I don't know whether it's sodium pentothal or whatever it is, but when they get you in that state from the drugs, then they mm-hmm. can hypnotize you
mm-hmm.
and selectively block your memories. Because take the case, for example, of the lady who wrote Lost Was the Key, Leah Haley is her pseudonym.
She was excellent, yeah.
Yeah, well, that was the key to the compartment of her mind she was talking about.
Oh.
And so the ETs picked her up when she was in a hotel room in Columbus, Mississippi with her husband. And they just put him to sleep in that room, and they have a way of holding him in delta with the power of their mind.
Mm-hmm.
And they take her, and she's dressed in her panties. You know, she's out getting a little tour down the beach. My feeling is that these ETs were told to stay away from Gulf Breeze because hard copy, current affair, and Unsolved Mysteries had their television crews in Gulf Breeze. All three of those crews were in Gulf Breeze that weekend.
Hmm.
And I think they were told to stay away.
Mm-hmm.
And when they didn't, and they were cruising down the beach, coming from Gulf Breeze toward Fort Walton Beach where I lived, when they were cruising along on that 13 miles that's part of Eglin Air Force Base, where they were testing the directed EMP device, somebody gave them orders to shoot that, hit that thing with the directed EMP device.
What were they in? Say they were coming down the beach. What were they in?
Leah was in something like the crown-shaped vehicle.
Okay.
Which is probably about 25 feet in diameter. And
mm-hmm.
And just cruising down, she was looking out of what she said what looked like a window, and she sees this ship out there looked like a small destroyer, and she was looking at that ship. That's a ship that they brought over, you know, after the accident in the Apollo program. They had brought that ship over to the Gulf to track the UFOs that are around the Gulf Breeze at that time,
mm-hmm.
and she was looking at that, and she said she felt a jolt. And then she felt a falling sensation, which people don't normally report when they're on board these alien vehicles. And she said, I don't know whether I went unconscious or not, but the next thing I remember, I was on my hands and knees in the floor, and the door was open. So she crawls over the door and walks out on the beach, and there's a guy in military uniform with one of these little 4.5-5-foot actually a Zeta, not one of the gophers, one of the biological robots. They have to go and pick people up and bring them in. And he was over the shoulder like a sack of potatoes. I didn't get a real good measurement of that particular guy, so I don't know whether it was one of the robots or an actual Zeta who were designed to look a lot like them. And And he was pleading with those big almond-shaped eyes for protection, for her to protect him from these military guys. There was a helicopter overhead with a loudspeaker saying, "Don't move, stay right where you are." And she saw on the ship they dropped a rope ladder out. They came down and got into a raft and came in. And picked her up, took her out to the deck of the ship. She climbed up the rope, and there was another alien on the deck also pleading telepathically for support from her. And they give her a shot in the arm. And they helped her over to the door, or the thing going down, the entranceway going down below decks. She said that the metal deck was warmer. And this is first light. This is maybe 30 minutes before sunrise. And she said she got dizzy at the bottom of the stairs, sit down. The next thing she knows, she says it's cooler below decks than it was on deck. So that tells us the summertime water temperature is 84 out there. They keep the temperature inside about 74, I think. And the next thing she remembers, she's being escorted off of an airplane with a dark wing. She was told not to look at the wing, into an American-made sedan, no writing on it, same kind of car that Air Force uses, taken to the back door of the hotel in Mississippi. One guy went up to the counter to get her key, and all she could tell, she could see that they were serving the breakfast buffet. She didn't see a clock. Then they took her up to the hallway, and one guy went into the room where her husband was, and she was held in the hallway, dressed in somebody's raincoat now. She said quite a while before he gave her another shot and took her into the room. She and her husband both woke up the next morning with no memory of anything that happened that night before.
You know,
ETs are under treaty. They're required to block our memories of everybody they take on board. That was Eisenhower signing the treaty with the Zetas and Pleiades, 1954.
Interesting.
So when we shoot them down, we're obligated to block their memories and put them back where they got them.
Don, we are out of time. I'd like to invite you to come back and continue this conversation with George, whenever, next week, something like that, whatever is convenient for you. Very interesting. One note about Leah. In 2011, she reversed her position on having been abducted. She said, paraphrasing, she said, former self-described alien abductee Leah Haley has revised her perspectives about her experiences of high strangeness to conclude that no alien abductions ever took place in her life. She now completely attributes her remarkable perceptions to having been in involuntary research project subject. Commenting on literal alien abduction from her home in Pensacola, Haley says it doesn't happen. So something's up there.
I read that a long time ago.
That may be one of the disinformation things that you talked about.
Suggestion. Yeah. If people start getting too excited about their story, they will do things.
Yeah, calm them down.
Cause the public to not to get. They will pick them up, hypnotize them, give them a post-hypnotic suggestion. And, I know a number of other people that's happened to, but yes.
All right. Well, we should talk about that more our next visit if we can.
Super.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure, Jeff.
Well, thank you, Don, very, very much. I'll get this done with George maybe, and we'll get you on next week early if we can.
Yeah, I think I'll be here next week. I've got two trips scheduled for the rest of this month, but one's only 3 days and one's 6 days. So
very good. Well, thank you for that.
I'll talk to George about it.
We'll get it worked out. Thank you, Don. Very nice to meet you, and thanks for being on.
You too. Bye.
Thank you. And George, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
You're so much a gentleman. It just amazes me. You're so quiet and helpful, and you let the story tell itself. And thanks for bringing him on.
He does an excellent job, I think.
Yeah, he does. He doesn't need any help. So let's get together, and we'll get you guys back on here next week and carry on. That was really enjoyable, fascinating. So thank you, my friend, very much. And thanks for your concern and your call. And it's great to have so many wonderful people out there. So you take care, and we'll talk soon.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, good night, George. Major George Filer, U.S. Air Force retired, a mutual UFO Eastern director, and very interesting material to consider, and we'll be back.